cliffcentral.com.
Womantla on cliffcentral.com.
Oh yes, it's the time of the day. It's Womantla. It's Wednesday, and what a time to be alive. In a couple of days we're going to be 3 years old, and it's mixed emotions for me. I'm so excited that 3 years later, you know, like anybody that's in business will tell you that 3 years is the like watershed. So Cliff Central turns three in a couple of days, and Womantla is going to turn three along with Cliff Central. So rethinking this Womantla model, but I'm so excited about all of the things that we've been able to do. And I definitely feel like what a time to be alive. It's Woman Crush Wednesday. It's Womantla Day. And it's a year since Beyonce released Lemonade, right? Beyonce released Lemonade a year ago. I was just like, woke up this morning, got on the Twitter streets. I was late this morning when I woke up. But hey, you know, first thing you do, check out Twitter. What's happening on Twitter? And I saw this incredible tweet by the First Lady, Michelle Obama. She's still, in my mind, she's still FLOTUS and will be. I think she's the ultimate FLOTUS. And she posted, she retweeted Beyonce's tweet about Beyonce celebrating her one-year anniversary of Lemonade with a formation scholarship. She's giving a scholarship, four scholarships, one at Berkeley University, one at Parsons, her school for design, one at Howard University, and one at Spelman College, all of them which are historically black universities. Hashtag, I hope someone's listening in the South African government. And she's giving away four scholarships to women in one of those universities each, who want to study arts, who want to study African American studies, who want to study literature. And this is how she's celebrating 1 year of this album. I think, wow, this woman is absolutely amazing. And at the moment, also making headlines, Woman Crush Wednesday is so full today. Dr. Gray from Boxburg, one of the Time 100 most influential people. When I saw this, I was like, what? Who is this Dr. Gray and what does she do? Here in South Africa, changing the world. And of course she's changing the world, and in the incredibly important field, medical field of HIV, mother to child transmissions, which is one of the ways a lot of people get HIV right now, is actually being transmitted to babies. So even before their life gets going, they are doomed to live with this illness. And she is doing amazing and important work and has been chosen as one of Time's 100 most influential people because of the incredible work that she's doing in that field. And this one is a mixed reaction for me, because I'm so excited that she is one of the last two standing in terms of the French elections, but I'm not sure, you know, far right. Oh, I don't know if we need one more far right proponent in the world. But hey, I think Marine Le Pen should definitely get a hands up from us, because she's a girl out there doing her thing, living her best life, and really standing up for what she believes in. So those are my big two newsmakers for Woman Crush Wednesday today. And then sadly, the world we live in and the time we are alive in is one that also has things like hashtag he's sleeping. I woke up to find what was trending on South Africa's Twitter streets. Sleeping Bay. I'm like, what is Sleeping Bay? People are up at 2 a.m. checking this thing out and making a trend. And then when I follow it, I'm just like, how, girl, this girl should have been sleeping. So what? You know, this guy is out there sleeping wherever he's sleeping, and she gets this SMS and it's like, and all I wanted to say was hashtag girl zitande, because he doesn't deserve you, and you deserve a good night's sleep to have to be able to live your best life today. So I wish that wasn't trending, but it is, which got me thinking about the most important conversation that's not being had by a lot of women. And because I'm celebrating 3 years of Womantla, I thought, what is the most appropriate conversation that we have had so far around this thing? And this conversation for me is one of those conversations that don't get had, that are difficult and that are hard. It's 2015. I had a conversation with a divorce attorney about the do's and don'ts, and I thought, this is a good one. For hashtag sleeping bae, hashtag girls out there hurting, hashtag he's sleeping. This is a conversation that you want to be part of. It is one of those uncomfortable conversations, and I'm hoping to have a really great conversation. I've got a phenomenal lady in the studio with me. She's a divorce attorney, Beverly Clark. Thank you very much for coming and chatting with me today. And I know radio can be a little bit daunting, but believe me, it's far less than TV, and this is on radio, so we're not just out there. Yeah.
Thanks for having me, Pumi.
We're talking about old divorce. I think divorce is one of those things that every girl's worst nightmare. I don't know about the guys, but I know that it's every girl's worst nightmare. No one walks down the aisle hoping that it'll all end in divorce. And it's emotional, very emotional. And it's, as a woman, it's one of the things that when we think about it, when you're in it, when you're going through it, it's very emotional. I know from personal experience that it's quite a roller coaster. You know, you have up days, you have down days, and the toughest thing about it is making decisions throughout all of that. You have to make lots of really hard decisions. Beverly, I'm going to start most basic, you know, getting a divorce attorney. What are the basic things that every girl should be thinking about when they're meeting attorneys, when they're asking questions? What are the things you should be thinking about when you're thinking about getting a divorce, or when you've already made up your mind that you're getting a divorce, when you're looking for an attorney?
The most important thing by far is that you make sure that you contact a specialist family lawyer. Don't go to a general practitioner. Divorce and family law are very, very specialized areas of the law. They change all the time, and actually they require a special personality, I think.
I thought all lawyers had one personality. Shock.
Unfortunately, that is the reputation. We would like to think we're different. What you really don't want in a divorce lawyer is a shark. And that is only going to end up costing you money. What you want is somebody who looks at this as a life transition that they're going to help you through, and that they're going to partner with you. They are going to ask you to make certain decisions, but in consultation with them. They're not going to just take over your life and go and stomp all over you and your family and your husband. So that they will work with you actively to achieve a solution, a resolution. You don't want to destroy your family. You want to restructure your family. Divorce is a very normal social process. Something like 60% of marriages in South Africa end in divorce. So, you know, certainly one is not unusual. One shouldn't be stigmatized. One's children shouldn't be stigmatized. And you want an attorney who sees you as a whole person. They don't just see you as a file or a statistic or a legal matter on their desks. They work with you as a person and as a whole person, and they recognize that law is basically a helping profession. And I think all those qualities are important in divorce lawyers as opposed to other lawyers. Also, obviously, they have to be very cost sensitive. It's an incredibly difficult
and
thing.
Expensive process.
It is so expensive for the average person.
In fact, it's so expensive, sometimes you actually think of not doing it.
Literally.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of the cost, because it can be so expensive, when you first looking at the costs, looking at what's coming ahead, and because a lot of things are changing in your family as well, there's also a lot of things on the internet about DIY divorces. What if you really cannot afford a lawyer? Is a DIY divorce a good idea?
Pumi, I've seen so many tragic results of DIY divorces, so I actually think it should be don't DIY your divorce, because
like most DIY projects.
Yeah, you know, it's if you make a mistake or you agree to something without understanding what you're agreeing to, it has permanent consequences. And usually those consequences are not remediable at a later stage. Once there's a court order and it's done and dusted, there's nothing you can do about it. So sometimes if you just see an attorney once for some comprehensive advice about what you should and shouldn't agree to, that can be good enough. The actual technical process of getting the divorce through the courts is not easy. So DIY is a difficult task. It is just a very technical thing. I mean, I wouldn't know, how to conduct brain surgery, or I wouldn't know how to run that funny board you've got in front of you here in the radio studio. And so,
likewise, I can see it's a year in and I'm still learning how to make it.
And so you wouldn't know how to process documents through the courts and the sheriff's offices and to get the right returns of services and notice of set down. It's a very technically complex process.
So speaking of the comprehensive advice, what should you be asking, like Gara said this morning, if you're waking up next to this guy and you're kind of going, I can't do this anymore, right? What are the most important top five questions that you should be asking yourself and that you should be asking a lawyer when beginning the process of getting divorced? I like that face. Is that a difficult question?
As they say,
question?
It's a good face for radio.
Is that a difficult question?
So, before you go to the attorney, you need to prepare yourself, and this will save you a lot of money, okay? If you go to the attorney with the following information, number one, I'm married in or out of community of property. If I'm married out of community of property, here's a copy of my antenuptial contract. Here is a copy of my marriage certificate. Also, before you go, you draw up as far as you possibly can a balance sheet for yourself. These are all my assets. And these are all my liabilities, which is my debts, and these are documents proving each one. And as far as I know, these are all the assets and liabilities of my spouse. Okay, you draw those up on two separate sheets. Unless you're married in community, then it's all one. Then, as far as possible, you also look at your income and your expenditure. And you go to the attorney's consultation with your income and expenditure set out already on a piece of paper. By and large, when you make the appointment, certainly family lawyers will be able to send you a template of a monthly budget schedule so that you can fill that in before you go. That all saves you a huge amount of money. What you don't want to do is to go to the attorney and spend an hour and a half telling them the story that you should be telling your therapist. Okay. Therapy is a lot cheaper because they do not have the overheads of attorney's firms. Okay. Right. And
so you should come to the lawyer having gotten over some of the anger and the hurt.
You know what? If you can, but I mean, a proper family lawyer is fully going to understand that this is probably the most difficult thing that you're ever going to do. So and we have boxes of tissues on every boardroom table.
I loved that. I remember coming to your office and going, there's a box of tissue here. Wow.
Yeah.
And this is after having psyched myself up to say, I'm not going to cry about this. I'm not going to. But to arrive and find a box of tissues, I just was like, oh my God, I'm at the right place.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we know, and I can tell you those tissues are well used. Okay, men and women, almost every single one of them, ends up in tears in their first session. It is so emotional, and it's such a huge thing to be doing. You never, as you said earlier, you never expected yourself to end up in the divorce lawyer's office. You then realize that actually you're sitting here with a warm, sympathetic, caring person. Of course, you want to then just get it all off your chest and tell them the whole story. But hopefully they will guide you to say, look, just tell me briefly, what was the cause of the breakdown of the marriage? So people will come to me sometimes, put me with files of call records and emails and SMSs and God knows what else that they've got to prove that the wife or the husband is having an affair. It really makes...
Does that matter?
Doesn't really matter, no. Not all the evidence doesn't matter. You know, you can say, well, it seems that, you know, he or she is having an affair and so I can't live with that and he's lying to me and for me the marriage is over. Or you can say, I'm really not sure if the marriage is over, but I need to know what my options are. So on your question, sorry, just to finish on the other top five things, is to say to the attorney, my desired outcome. So you tell the story briefly. What am I doing there? Then you say, these are my assets and liabilities. These are his assets and liabilities. This is my income. This is my expenditure. Therefore, this is my shortfall. This is how we run our lives day to day financially. These are the issues around our children, if they're going to be issues. You know, the attorney wants to know who participates in the parenting, who are the children most closely bonded to, who's the children's primary caregiver. Are there going to be issues around parenting? Very often there aren't, you know, and one hopes that there aren't. And then you say to the attorney, my desired outcome, my wish list is this. Please can you then give me some advice as to what my options are and what are the different courses of action I could take. And I'm sure we'll get on to that, but the reason for that is that there are different ways to get divorced and they have different cost and emotional implications.
So if your desired outcome is to burn the house, burn the car, yeah, burn him,
yeah.
If your desired outcome is to burn everything to the ground and let's start afresh. Does it, you know, so why is the question of what happened so important if the evidence doesn't matter?
It's important because it often informs the way you go forward, and the attorney then gets to understand where you're coming from. So that sometimes you will say something and they can unpack that, and they can say, you know what, let's just look at how that really is going to help you. I understand that you want to burn all the stuff. So, for instance, I did have clients where actually the husband took the entire contents of the house out onto the lawn, poured petrol all over it and burnt it in the middle of the night.
Okay. Oh, I have neighbors like that.
Yeah, I mean, I had another one where while the wife was out at work, the husband had a builder come into the house and build a wall down the middle. And down the middle of the house, he said, that's your side, this is my side. And that's
right.
That's how we're going to go.
Right. Ahead.
But I've forgotten your question.
Yeah, but if that's, if that's what you want.
Okay, so why, you're saying to me, why do we need to know?
Yes.
Okay, so we need to know briefly the causes of the breakdown. By and large, a breakdown of a marriage is not caused by just one party. And our law generally looks at it as a no-fault situation, okay? And so the fact that the one party was more annoying or more wicked or more bickery or more whatever than the other is not going to have any consequences in the divorce. However, if one party is very much more at fault than the other, then it can have consequences for maintenance of the dependent spouse. Okay, so that if the divorce was largely caused by either the serial adultery of the other or the ongoing abuse by the other party or by the other party just getting up and walking out for no reason, whatever, if there are serious issues of fault, it can be relevant. The evidence then can be relevant to the issue of maintenance for a spouse. Not maintenance for the children, and not, you know, not the division of the joint estate, whatever, but the but the spouse's maintenance. The only other thing is that in certain instances, in certain rare instances, one can claim that the other party must forfeit their right to the patrimonial benefits of the marriage. If you are married in community or you're married by way of accrual.
What does that mean, patrimonial?
Means the division of the property.
Okay.
Okay, mm-hmm. The assets. Mm-hmm. So, which is, you know, as opposed to maintenance issues. Okay. So there again, fault can be relevant only in rare cases to say, you know what, you walked into this marriage, you had no intention of abiding by your marital vows. You have had 16 affairs in the last 5 years, and I've made all the money, and I don't think it would be just if you were to share in that. And I want the court to order that you must forfeit it, or you must forfeit a percentage of what you would otherwise have got. So for those reasons, a brief, setting out briefly to the attorney what the causes were for the breakdown gives them an idea as to whether they need to explore that further with you or not, or whether it was just one of those unfortunate cases where, for whatever multitude of reasons, the marriage failed.
And just talking about the various outcomes and the related costs thereof, do you want to just share a little bit about that?
So, it is very rare that a divorce ends up actually going to trial. Okay.
Except on TV.
Except on TV, okay. Exactly. Or except if you have one of those shark lawyers we were talking about. Mm. Okay. Or obviously if you have a completely intransigent partner who simply will not settle or is bent on destroying you or bent on having his or her day in court or whatever. But I don't know what the statistics are, but definitely over 99% of divorces do not go to trial. And if you have a good attorney, look, trials are very lucrative for attorneys. And
all those days in court without a set time when you're going to actually
it's a day after day after day. I mean, it is hugely, hugely expensive to go to trial. So there are attorneys who have very high rates of divorces going to trial. I don't think that that is anything to be proud of. What we are very proud of is that almost none of our matters go to trial. And we, as you can imagine, do hundreds and hundreds of divorces in my firm. So if you have a good attorney, they're going to help you to settle before that. There are ways to do that. Either you will each have your own attorney, and those attorneys will assist you to negotiate and to reach some sort of a settlement. Or you will go to divorce mediation. Now, a divorce mediator is a specially trained person who is there as a neutral third party to just broker a fair agreement between you. Okay, it's a problem-solving process. It's a safe process, and by and large, if people have little children, or if they are prepared to, if they know they have to reach an agreement, and there's no abuse, in other words, a completely unfair power dynamic in the relationship, then divorce mediation is a fantastic idea. And that one person, through a series of meetings with you, will assist you to reach agreement on all issues. Okay, and you both buy into that process, so you feel you're involved. You don't feel someone's imposing anything on you. You don't have this series of acrimonious letters passing between the attorneys. It's just the two of you with the mediator, and you can have a divorce, your own attorney, who you phone or email in between sessions and say, look, this is what he's offered, what do you think, you know, can I come and bounce it off you? But nevertheless, you're going through the mediation process. That is very much quicker and cheaper than going through the litigation process. That's where one party issues summons, the other one defends it, there's a whole series of pleadings, and then there's all the financial disclosure that has to be made, then there's expert evidence, expert assessments. You're looking there at hundreds of thousands of rand for that. It's much longer, it is very much more emotionally draining, it's an arduous process, and very much longer and very much more expensive than mediation. The one other option, which is very, very new in South Africa, and there are very few of us who are trained to do this, is collaborative divorce. Now, what happens in collaborative divorce is that both parties appoint collaboratively trained divorce attorneys to represent them. And so it is a process whereby those two attorneys, whilst they are very much holding your hand, supporting you, fighting your side, you know, standing solidly in your corner, they know that the outcome has to be to settle. So the agreement that all the parties sign before they start the collaborative process is, if I undertake that if this process does not reach resolution, my attorney will resign and will not represent me in court. So that you will then know you have wasted all that time and money, because your attorney will then step away, walk away, and you'll have to start from scratch with the litigated process. So there's a huge incentive there to settle. And during the collaborative process, there are two other professionals involved in the collaborative team. One is what's called a divorce coach. They are there to hold the party's hands and contain the emotions and guide the inevitably emotional issues that arise. And the other is the financial neutral expert, and that person looks at all the assets and liabilities, income and expenditure, looks at possible scenarios, assists in that way. And then sometimes the two collaborative attorneys will also appoint jointly a child specialist who will look at the interests of the children coming out of the process. So that you feel supported, not like in mediation where you might feel very alone. You feel supported, you feel that a thorough process has been undertaken and there's been proper disclosure, but you know that the outcome will be an agreement and not a trial.
So that is a very grown-up process.
Exactly.
It needs everybody to be grown up
exactly.
in the situation.
Exactly.
Because the emotional stuff, I mean, you probably will still get emotional.
Yeah,
there's a lot of anger or whatever other feelings are involved, but you have to get over yourself and be a grown-up. And I just want to talk a little bit about children in that process. A lot of women, I mean, our society still sees the mother as the caretaker of children, and therefore a lot of women always end up with the children. And just as I was reading through all sorts of blogs and sites, and one of the things that comes up all the time is really how the situation settling around how the children are A, maintained, and B, raised at the end of it all, becomes very contentious. And how can I then, going into a divorce situation, what would your advice be in terms of how to handle that so that it comes out as best an outcome as possible?
So the first thing would be, how are you and your spouse going to tell the children about the divorce? One of the most damaging things that can happen to children is if one or other parent tells them about the divorce and blames the other parent. Yeah. You know, that might make you feel good temporarily, but it certainly doesn't make your children feel good. It confuses them, it often makes them feel guilty, and it makes them feel terrified. They're very worried that they are going to, like their mommy is losing daddy, maybe they're also going to lose daddy. Okay. So the experts would say to you, if at all possible, if you can force yourselves to do this, sit down and tell the children together. Mom and Dad have decided that we're not going to live together anymore, and we both want you to know that we love you just as much as we ever have, and we will continue to do so, and you will continue to have a mom and a dad, and you're going to be lucky because actually you're going to have two homes, two happy, peaceful homes. And, you know, the children will have seen the fighting, they will have seen the tension, and you want to make them realize that actually this is going to be better than it was in the past, and that they don't need to be afraid. So that's the first thing, is how you tell the children. And if there are going to be difficulties around that, or if the situation is so incredibly acrimonious that you can't see that happening, go and see a specialist social worker or psychologist who deals with children in divorce, and ask them for some advice around what to do and how to tell the children. And as I say, if you can possibly persuade your spouse to be decent and do it nicely and promise ahead of time neither of us is going to blame the other in that session, then if the children need it, and I think most children do, make sure your children get some help, either through the counselor at school or through a private social worker or psychologist or at FAMHSA. Let them have some counselling, or for little children, some play therapy, just to work through the issues for themselves. I mean, it's obviously is a massive transition and a massive loss for children. The third thing is that if at all possible, you should be entering into a parenting plan with your spouse. That parenting plan is mediated with what they call a suitably qualified person, okay? So that can be a family advocate, a psychologist, a social worker, or a specialist family attorney. And they will help the two of you to agree on all aspects of your future parental rights and responsibilities. looking at the who's going to care for the children on what day, who's going to take them to school, who's going to fetch them from school, what days are they going to stay with the one parent, what days are they going to stay with the other parent. Our system is very much geared towards joint parenting post-divorce to make sure that the children get the best out of both their parents and that the parents both step up to the plate and take responsibility for their children. Parenting is far more of a responsibility than a right. And for me, big red flags are raised when people come and thump their hands on the desk and talk about, I want 50-50. I want to make sure the children are with me 50% of the time. Well, is that best for the children or is that best for you? It's not about rights. It's not about getting, equal, and you've got to be equal in all things, and we're going to count the days and the minutes. It's about what is best for your children. So, again, the parenting plan, going to an expert, having somebody tell you who is the correct expert to go to sort out our parenting plan. You then sign that parenting plan, and that gets annexed to your divorce settlement agreement, and it also becomes an order of court. The parenting plan can also cover the issues around maintenance of the children. So, so those are the issues. And the final thing is, to not cause damage to the children, is also get some therapy or counseling for yourself. And hopefully through that you will both understand the, obviously you'll work through your own hurt and emotions and anger and loss, but you will also understand how you can make or break your children through this, through how you conduct your divorce.
I'm going to let you catch your breath, but and when we come back, I really want us to talk about enforcing, divorces are court orders and enforcing it. So it's all well and dandy getting the right lawyer, getting the right plans in place and all of that kind of stuff, but not everybody sticks to it.
I am the future of South Africa. On my shoulders, I carry the hopes and dreams of generations to come. I'm eager to learn, but even more eager to use my knowledge for good. I know that it's not where I come from, but where I'm going to, that really matters.
At Sibanye Gold, we believe our youth is worth its weight in gold, which is why we are so committed to developing, nurturing, and grooming our young people into future leaders. Sibanye Gold, we are one.
I couldn't resist that one. It's Queen Bee, and she is talking about Irreplaceable and how easy people are to replace. I think it's one of those songs that when it came out, every girl was kind of like looking at her man like, I could replace you. I absolutely couldn't not play that one. Today we're talking about divorce. We're talking about how to keep a cool head, how to pick a lawyer, and what you should be looking out for when you're getting divorced. I think one of the things that comes up all the time, especially when I was researching for the day, is how women come out on the other side of divorces with the short end of the stick. They get the kids, they don't get the money, they don't get, and they come out with the short end of the stick. And some of the, of more and more, as I was reading up, a lot of the things that were coming up really is about making clear-headed decisions, because you're emotional, you're angry, there's a lot of things going on, there's a lot of moving parts, and so clear-headed decisions don't get made all the time. In South Africa in particular, one of the things about divorces is always about after the divorce. So once you've made all the decisions, once you've made all the parenting plans, once all the decisions around maintenance and who gets what, and the dust has settled, one of the most difficult things is enforcing those rules. Beverly, you talking about, and I've got Beverly Clark in the studio with me, a divorce attorney, family law, right? Is that what it's called? And what's the second one?
Collaborative divorce and mediation.
Collaborative divorce and mediation. Very forward thinking. And if you want to know more or how to get hold of Beverly, the website is clarksattorneys.co.za, C-L-A-R-K-S, attorneys. And they're based right here in Johannesburg. So Beverly, talk to me about that court order. So now the dust has settled. You've fought it all out. snot and trana, all done, and you've got your court settlement, and it's got all these wonderful things that you fought out. Enforcing the decisions that have been made, how easy or difficult is that?
Okay, unfortunately, if you have difficulties with enforcement, it inevitably means more cost, because you have to then pay more money to go and implement your enforcement procedures. If we talk briefly firstly about issues around residence and contact of children, what you cannot do is force somebody to or compel somebody to exercise contact. Okay, so what you can do is enforce that they stick to the contact arrangements by bringing the children back at the right time, etc. But if they simply don't bother to pitch, and you say, this is harming my children, I want the father to have contact, you can't force somebody to have contact. So that's one thing you can't enforce. It is a right which they can choose to exercise or not. The issues around maintenance, if somebody doesn't pay maintenance, it is theoretically fairly easy to take your divorce order to the maintenance court or back to the High Court and get what's called a writ or a warrant of execution. And the sheriff then takes that to the non-paying ex-spouse and attaches certain of their belongings. So the sheriff would say, look, this thing says there's an amount here of 14,642 Rand owing. Do you want to pay me right now? If the party says, no, I don't have the money, then the sheriff will wander around the house and start, you know, attaching the fridge and the sofa or the motor car or whatever. But then you still have to go through the process of that stuff being removed and sold on auction. It's not an easy task. Mm-hmm. So you're hoping that when you get the writ, the person's going to want to pay up. The maintenance court can issue certain other attachment orders, such as an emoluments attachment order. That is then served on the employer, and the money is deducted directly from their salary. In certain circumstances, the person can be found to be in contempt and can be jailed. And all these things theoretically work well. And for some people, they really do work well, and the maintenance court is very helpful. But unfortunately, we still have a number of courts around the country where the officials are not helpful, and they are rude and sometimes abrasive and even abusive of the members of the public who go there in need of assistance. So that's very unfortunate. But you must insist that somebody helps you. This is their job, and they must help you.
And it's law. It's law. Actually, a court order actually means that you've got the might of the law behind you.
Yeah.
What about changing stuff that's in the will? So he doesn't show up only when he wants, or he's not paying, and you want to have some of those decisions changed on that court order. How easy is that?
Okay, so if it's to do with children, whether it be residence and contact issues or maintenance issues, those are always fluid, they're never cast in stone, and they can be varied according to changes in circumstance and changes in the best interests of the children. So say you find out that the other party is has developed a real drug problem, or is hanging out with people who you know to be dangerous. And I'm not talking about, you know, just people you don't like. You know, the best interests of children are paramount in all issues concerning the children. The children's own views and wishes are also of considerable importance, and they have to be asked. You can then always go back to court and apply for a variation of existing terms based on what is in the best interest of the children. What you can't vary is the what I call the proprietary consequences. In other words, who got what in terms of the assets. That is cast in stone when there's a divorce order, unless in certain circumstances somebody, for instance, fraudulently misrepresented what their assets were. Then there was a fraud on the court, and then you can bring an application to change. But by and large, you should consider that those things are cast in stone. Whoever got whatever part of the assets, whatever, that's done and dusted. Okay, can't go back on that. But if you have maintenance that was worked out on what you're both earning at the time of the divorce, and then one of you loses your job, then the maintenance can be varied. Or if there's certain other significant changes in circumstance, maybe one of your children suddenly needs to go to a remedial school. Those kind of things. You can then go to court and apply, go to the maintenance court and apply for a variation. I want to get more maintenance from the other one, or I want to pay less maintenance because I've lost my job. But until you actually go to the court and vary it, the existing order stands. You can't just, for instance, decide, which we often have, you know, oh, my business is not going so well, I'm just not going to pay her for a few months. And then
because the kids aren't going to eat for a few months.
Exactly. Yeah, just keep the mouth closed. But many people do. They just don't go and change that. They don't go to court and change the order or make application or, you know, give proper disclosure of what's going on in their lives. Mm-hmm. And they just expect, usually the mother, to just make do, find the money, borrow from friends, relatives, steal, I don't know what. But it's about what suits them, you know, and that's not okay. There again, you have the mother. The mother has to go to court. It's a huge mission, unfortunately.
Inconvenience.
It's a huge inconvenience. It's days of your time. There are queues. But it really is worth your while doing it.
Biggest mistakes you can make when starting divorce proceedings. What are some of the big kind of just, this is a big mistake, bad idea, don't do it?
Saying I've had enough and I'm going, I can't take this anymore, and walking out of the house. Okay. Particularly if you are the primary caregiver of the children and you leave the children behind. Because you might say, you know what, I just need a little bit a break. I'm coming back in 3 days or 10 days or a week or 6 days, whatever. And 9 times out of 10, by the time you come back, they'll say, sorry, babe, you left the children with me. I'm now the primary caregiver. You can't have them back. Mm-hmm. Okay, so no matter how bad things are, don't throw your hands up in the air and just walk out of the house. Mm-hmm. Also, if you are the dependent spouse and or the primary caregiver of the children, again, be careful not to move out of the house if you can possibly help it. You may have a husband who says, well, I'm not going anywhere. If you don't like it, yeah, you know, I don't know what you're going to do. But if you can possibly help it, stay in the house until certain other arrangements have been made. Okay. One of the other problems is separating before you reach any agreement around contact with the children. Because then sometimes you find that the other spouse tries to use the children as a weapon, withhold contact in order to punish you, whatever. So if one of you is going to leave, you should say, look, I really do want to leave. I want to give you your space, but let's just make arrangements around what contact I'm going to be having with the children after we've separated. That's not only a good idea for the two parents, but it is the only fair thing to do for the children. So that's important. The other thing is if your spouse suddenly stops supporting you in the same way they have supported you until then. So they suddenly say, well, if that's how you want it, I'm going to cut up your credit card or take your petrol card or punish you in some other financial way. Exactly. And I mean, it happens all the time. don't just leave it. If you go to court 6 months later and you say, he hasn't paid me any maintenance, the court will say, well, obviously you're okay.
But, you been doing for 6 months?
Yeah, so obviously you didn't really need it. So you need to then implement procedures immediately, either by bringing what's called a Rule 43 application in the High Court as part of your divorce proceedings, which is an application for interim maintenance or interim contact pending the divorce. Or you can just take yourself, by yourself, off to the maintenance court. And get a maintenance order. The idea of the Rule 43 procedure, though, is that it is supposed to be a quick and robust procedure where the court will make some sort of an order to maintain the status quo pending the divorce. Mm-hmm. So if they whipped away your credit cards, they will tell them to give them back or to start paying you a monthly amount. If the situation was so intolerable at home that you simply had to move out, they will order that the spouse pays your rent for somewhere else. But the quicker you do that, the better.
Mm. And during the divorce, things that one shouldn't do, things one should never do during the process of the divorce.
Okay. One should never use the children as a weapon. Okay, don't ever, ever think, I know really what his sore spot is. I'm going to get more money out of him by stopping him seeing the children. That is, I just think it's criminal.
Or stopping his mother. Exactly. Well, you're allowed to do that.
Unless she's a nasty witch. But I just think that is criminal and unforgivable to draw your children into the process like that. So force yourself, okay, not to do that. Second thing, don't send interminable abusive emails or SMSs to your spouse. They will come back to bite you.
No drunk dialing?
You have no idea, Pumi, how often people think that if they send the most poisonous, vituperative email to the other spouse, that it'll show the court just what a horrible person the other spouse is. Okay. That they forced me to send this awful thing. And people do it all the time. And then what happens is, during the process, we have a process of what's called discovery, where all relevant documents have to be disclosed to the other party and to the judge. And lo and behold, there are all your nasty little swearing emails and SMSs. Okay. So don't do that.
Phone a friend.
Email your attorney. Say, I want to actually cut his head off. Okay, I can't take this anymore, but I'm holding back, I'm not writing it to him. Or write the whole thing to make yourself feel better and then save it in your own little divorce file so that you know how you felt on that day, and maybe it's a contemporaneous note of what happened on that day that made you feel like that. But don't send it to the other party.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, if you are the financially more powerful partner, think about doing the right thing.
Sure.
You know,
okay, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
Do the right thing.
Live to your highest self, not your basest, most angry, appalling self. Think, for instance, about maintenance. My advice to the financially powerful partner is, when we talk about maintenance for your children, how much can you possibly afford? Not how little can I get away with paying? People come to me and say, I just want to pay as little maintenance as possible. I say, you know, that is...
still your children.
Revolting, yeah. Mm-hmm. These are your children. So as much as you shouldn't use children as a weapon, you also shouldn't use money as a weapon and a punishment, and withholding money to punish the other spouse. The divorce court is not there to punish people for not making the marriage work. And the divorce court won't be used like that. And all you're going to do is waste your own money on extra legal costs. The more you fight, the more you pay. Attorneys charge by the hour. They charge for their time. The more time you make them spend on your case instead of somebody else's, the more money it's going to cost you at the end of the day. You can contain and manage the process by just trying to be as calm as possible, answering the questions the attorney asks you, phone a friend, go to see your therapist, etc. So that is the other mistake you can make during the divorce process, is sending the attorney non-stop emails. And I can't tell you, I have clients, Pumi, who send me, I had one last week, in fact, who sent me 70 emails in a week. Okay. Now,
to write 70 emails.
70 emails. And then I must respond to them. And then they're surprised when they get the bill. They didn't have to send me those. Nobody has to send their divorce attorney 70 emails in a week. It's just not necessary. So those are the top mistakes you can make.
70 emails is a little bit excessive.
You think?
Wow. But so... You know, I love that about living to your higher self, because I think one of the things that, in my experience at least, it's such a big transition, and there's so many things happening. There's so many things that you blame yourself for. There's so many things, and it's easy. And it's easier to blame the other person rather than yourself and be angry. Mm. And so some of those things that come up all the time, the angry drunk calling, drunk dialing, the SMSs, all of that kind of stuff really is about your experience of everything. But speaking of costs, and we speak a lot about costs, and I know that it's like a doctor. Everybody's got their own, their different rates. But speaking of the costs, in the most perfect, most ideal situation, what are we looking at in terms of from the moment you decide this is done and walking into an attorney's office till you have your court order of a divorce decree on the other side? What kind of time frames are we looking at?
Okay, so if it is a simple, unopposed divorce with a settlement agreement that is pretty much agreed, okay, nothing complex, and we draft the settlement agreement for you, we draft the pleadings, we take the matter through the courts, we brief counsel, we instruct sheriffs, we do all the serving and filing for you. We take you to court on the day to go and get the divorce, stand up, give evidence, etc., etc. You're probably looking at about 25,000 rand. Thereafter, the more if there's any disagreement around how you are going to settle, and we have to start writing letters backwards and forwards, sitting and consulting with you, taking further instructions, then running that by the other side, maybe having settlement meetings, scrutinizing documents, drafting schedules of assets and liabilities, sourcing all the relevant evidence, issuing subpoenas to get the other party's bank statements because they won't give them to us. All that stuff is just charged by time. An average litigated divorce that maybe settles within a year, say, you are probably looking at in the region of 80 to 100,000 rand for each spouse in legal costs. But in major cases when there's a great deal of money involved, or there are exceptionally complex issues around the children, you are looking at hundreds of thousands of rand and even millions of rand for each spouse, because then it becomes like a commercial case, where there are huge valuations of companies or hidden assets, or where assets have been hidden away in a trust, or where one spouse who has lived an incredibly extravagant lifestyle and flown around on a private jet suddenly says, I don't have any money, you were deluding yourself. What do you mean? I'm not rich. Mm. Well, you know, that is a very, very difficult and costly process to go and find those assets, and it requires forensic investigators, forensic accountants. It's hugely expensive, Pumi, you don't want to go there.
This is a real thing?
Yeah.
People live like this? Okay, so that's about a year. So middle of the range kind of is about a year. But so the 25,000 rand special, how long would that take?
2 to 3 months. In a good, if you've got good attorneys, yeah, who are organized. And
if he's got an attorney and you haven't yet got an attorney, is it a good idea to get an attorney, or could you be in the, could you use the one attorney and do your own stuff?
No, I would almost never advise you to go and see your partner's attorney by yourself. You can make all sorts of concessions. You can be persuaded to do things that you don't understand. It is a very difficult situation. By and large, an ethical attorney should not encourage the other spouse to come and meet with them alone. Okay. If the attorney says to you, come in and see me. You know, your husband's been to see me. Come in and see me. Let's talk. You should see big alarm bells. Okay. You rather say, no, I'm going to get my own attorney, and then we can all meet together, or my attorney can contact you. Or you say to them, I'll think about it, but please send me an email telling me exactly what it is that you want to propose. So you don't go there without any knowledge or without any forethought, you know, because you can go in there, and there are a lot of attorneys who are very ready to bully the disempowered spouse, and just to get a great deal for their client. Maybe I shouldn't say a lot of attorneys. I mean, specialist family lawyers shouldn't be like that.
Mm.
But there certainly are attorneys who will get you in their office, will bully you, persuade you, and get you to give up all sorts of things that you shouldn't have given up if you had had proper legal advice.
Speaking about empowering yourself with knowledge, so today's show, great podcast to send to all your friends, but empowering yourself with knowledge, where does one go to get that knowledge? Is there a roster of who are family lawyers? Or do you just ask a chomi?
You know, I always think, and I can tell you that like 95% of our business comes from word of mouth. So there's a funny thing that I see it time and time again. People choose attorneys who are in some way similar to them. You've got to have a connection with your divorce lawyer. You've got to trust them. You've got to be able to talk to them. So by and large, so that's why we think all our clients are nice, because we're nice.
Very nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, we are really tough litigators when we have to be, but that is not our preferred mode. We will try and encourage people to be decent and, as I said, to do the right thing, okay, from both sides. And we'll try and work with the other attorney and not against them. But if we have to fight, you know, we're very good at doing that too. empowering yourself, I mean, I suppose you've got to. There is so much stuff now on the net. I must tell you that there's a lot of stuff. There's even a book that was published recently by a South African attorney on do it on your divorce or do it yourself divorce or things you should know divorce or something. And there are fundamentally wrong. There is fundamentally wrong legal advice in that book. And it was published and the publishers didn't know and whatever. And I've seen it quoted in Fair Lady and whatever. And it's wrong. So I can only tell you that you always are better off finding the money to go for at least one consultation with an attorney. Otherwise,
specialist family attorney.
Specialist family lawyer. Otherwise, contact FAMSA in your area. That's FAMSA. They're also.
We love FAMSA. We've spoken to FAMSA.
FAMSA
a lot.
Is very helpful. And it's an NGO, so you will pay something, but not as much as going to see
and
an
they
attorney.
Also have mediators.
They will give you mediation, yeah. And the difference with their mediation, you will generally get very good mediation, but you don't get to choose.
Mm.
Okay. So you are just allocated to mediators, and there might be people you just cannot bear or who cannot bear you.
Which can happen. And just one last thing. We've got a minute to go, and I can see outside the window here that the guys are here for the soccer show. They're all here already, coming up next. And one of the most amazing things that I heard from your partner, in fact, is about lawyers are creatures of instruction. So you must never feel pressured by your lawyer to make a decision. Mm. In fact, the decisions come from you.
Yes.
They're not going to make the decisions for you.
Yeah.
So it's important to get a clear head, think it through, sleep over it if you must.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Quick decisions don't necessarily mean you're getting a good deal.
Absolutely. You know, it is your divorce. It is your life. Ask your attorney to empower you with knowledge, but understand that the one who has to live with this is you. So you are the one who must make the decision and then give the instruction. You should be able to give an informed instruction because your attorney has helped you through that and your attorney has given you advice. But the instruction comes from you, the client.
Beverly, thank you so much. This has been an incredibly informative conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you
and
so
you're
much,
like
Pumi.
You're an unradio natural.
And I can change.
Your website's address again?
It's www.clarksattorneys.co.za.
Based in Johannesburg, Beverly Clark, a specialist family lawyer. Thank you very much for chatting with us. And I'm out of here, but I'm back here again next week, Wednesday, as always, 12 o'clock on Womandla. Thank you for sharing your day with us.
CliffCentral.com.
What energy crisis? It's total hippie nonsense.
That's it. The Earth has officially run out of fuel. Down goes the power, and with it, that guardian of all knowledge, the Internet. Years of dependence on the cloud have turned our brains to cellulite, so now we're proper stupid. We start to struggle with simple things like opening beer bottles and controlling our saliva. Baffled by anatomical complexities such as what goes where, we stop procreating. And just as well, given our tremendous nincompoopiness. Millions die in tragic scissor running accidents, but who's counting? No one. Because no one can count anymore. Instead of village idiots, we now have idiot villages. We spend our time foraging for wild mushrooms and telling knock-knock jokes to our imaginary new unicorn friends. Human intelligence plummets so low, we ironically no longer understand the concept of gravity.
Last one off the cliffs of Pawpaw,
says the chief numbnut. And with that, we proceed to collectively win the very last Darwin Award. The future's coming, so travel before it's not fun anymore with student flights.
CliffCentral.com.